Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, a semi-friendly discussion between two blokes on watches, cars, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy and Sanjeev.
Welcome to a Land Jam short, Swatch Pain. Oh, Swatch Pan.
Swatch Pan. Yeah, so I guess, you know, everyone is popping off about the Blancpain Swatch collaboration that dropped on September 9th. So, you know, I figured we would chat about it, Sanj, you know?
Are you talking about this while you're still in line? You're camping out at one of the Swatch boutiques, right?
Yeah, I've been here since like a week ago. Yeah, since since they announced the date. I actually watched a video of a guy in California, I think, who came out the night before and got a chair and waited in line to be the first in the store. So, you know, the hype is real for some people. You know, they're doing this. But, you know, let's first talk about the watch, right? And then we'll go into kind of our thoughts, right? So we're talking about the Blancpain Swatch Bioceramic Scuba 50 Fathoms collection. So it's five watches. It's basically the Blancpain 50 Fathoms getting the Moon Swatch treatment. That's kind of one way to think about it.
Right.
So five different watches, each of them with an ocean theme. One thing to keep in mind is Blancpain, you know, basically had a slogan, I think in the 80s, according to Into Fratello, saying, you know, since 1735, there's never been a quartz Blancpain watch. And there never will be, and they haven't broken that promise. So, you know, this watch actually, unlike the Moon Swatch, is using an automatic movement, the System 51. Broadly speaking, you know, the five watches are coming in a 42 millimeter case, 48 millimeters lug to lug, 14 millimeters, 14.4 thickness. So it's a big boy.
It is. The thickness is interesting because that's. It's just a basic three-hander with a date complication, right?
No GMT, no chronograph module. Yeah, so it's a bit, you know, it's a bit thick for what it is. Obviously, you know, similar to the Moon Swatch, it's got that bioceramic case. So for our understandings, it's two-thirds ceramic, one-third castor oil. You know, make of that what you will.
I think it is maybe like somewhat using some sort of recyclable material.
I think the straps are using recyclable material.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The case. Yeah. So water resistance to 91 meters, aka 50 fathoms. Ha ha ha. Very clever. You know, not sapphire crystal, but they got like a scratch resistant plastic. And there's also a case back for each of the watches. So on each of the five watches, there's a sea slug, native to that ocean, to kind of continue that theme. Inside ticking is the System 51, 19 jewel caliber, named 51 because it has 51 parts. It's all assembled by robots. It's, you know, one of these Swatch Group innovations that's come out in the last couple of years. 90-hour power reserve, which is impressive, actually.
That is actually very, very impressive.
Yeah, and all for $400. So that's the rundown of the watch, right? So, you know, just to dig a little bit deeper, there's five watches in the collection, right, named after the five oceans. The Atlantic Ocean is that blue black one, Sanj?
Yeah.
Right. And this has like the triangle markers. There's a date window between 4 and 5. Similar kind of design for the Pacific Ocean, except it's in yellow. Same thing with the date window. And also similar to the Indian Ocean, which is in green. So same thing with the date window. The interesting thing is the Arctic Ocean and the Antarctic Ocean doesn't have a date. But they have that moisture indicator one for the moisture indicator button for the Antarctic, and you've got the radioactive or no radiation logo for the Arctic. That's like an orange take, the Arctic, and the Antarctic is like a white blue kind of gray thing. So that's the quick rundown. I mean, besides those differences on the dial, Basically, you know, the watches are more or less the same, with or without a, you know, obviously a date window. So what are your thoughts, Ange? I mean, you're looking at the collection. What do you think of the execution, first and foremost? Does it remind you of a Blancpain 50 Fathoms, first and foremost?
For the most part, yeah, I think so. I think the one that reminds me of the Blancpain 50 Fathoms are the, is that the Antarctica version? And the, which is the orange one again. That's the, yes.
Yeah.
I think that one to me looks like a Blancpain 50 Fathoms. I haven't I can't think of like a one that, a 50 Fathoms that has numerals at the 12, 3, 6, and 9. But I could be mistaken. I mean, it's Blancpain is a brand I personally don't pay too much attention to. I do respect its history, especially with the 50 Fathoms being, you know, kind of like the first.
We'll get back to that. But yeah, go on. Yeah.
So I think the execution is not bad at all. I mean, it's a colorful play on a brand and also a model that's kind of, in my opinion, known within the watch enthusiasts, but not necessarily to the public. I mean, there, yeah. Blancpain as a brand is not as marketed as much as, let's say, Omega, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a, you know, it's not, you know, it's got prestige, you know, it's not, you know, but as far as like, where does it sit in people's minds? Like, I don't know, like Certina, like not that many people talk about Blancpain. It's just not a front of mind thing. I mean, obviously it's more prestigious than Certina, for example, but all I mean is like, it's not the front row of the Swatch group, right? I mean, Omega is like front row. Everyone talks about it.
Right. From a marketing perspective.
From a marketing perspective. I'm not saying anything about quality or anything like that.
But like Blancpain is the same level. I think if the, you know, in the Swatch pyramid, right? If you are in a place, you know, Breguet and those guys at the very top, I think Blancpain is in the same level as Omega in their prestige.
Yes.
And price point.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think the idea behind this is similar to the Moonswatch in that, you know, when the Moonswatch campaign was over, the sales for the regular moon watch were up. People were more interested in the Speedmaster, and more people were walking to Swatch stores than ever before. Swatch was, you know, a very 80s kind of thing. You know, it was kind of, you know, I don't know if it was going the way of the Dodo, but like, you know, it really wasn't front of mind for a lot of people. But Moonswatch changed all that. So I think they were trying to capture that magic twice with the you know, Blancpain Swatch collaboration, Swatchpain. But you know, we'll see if it works the same magic for Blancpain. You know, I do think that there's a lot of buzz for it. I don't see the mania that people had for the Moonswatch. I don't know about you, but
I'm surprised the lineups and the media highlighting, you know, opening day people lining up for the Blancpain. I was kind of surprised. It's just because of, like I said, the Blancpain is not as marketable, or they don't market as much as, let's say, Omega. Like,
I think there's a couple things going on. Like, there's watch enthusiasts that are kind of, there's some of them that are kind of into this Swatch, you know, anytime you can get something collectible, right? If you make five different things of a thing, it doesn't matter what it is, like your whatever, shoes, cups, it doesn't matter. People go and collect it. It's just a thing, right? And like, you've also got like hype culture, like the same kinds of people that like line up for sneakers, you know? So like, you know, you kind of have some crossovers of those worlds of like collectors, and you've also got freaks who are reselling it. Like, you know, I posted a picture of a guy selling one of these watches for like over $1,000, which is insane. It's like, you must be out of your, it's a plastic watch. You must be out of your GD mind, right? So, it makes no sense to me, but you know, we'll see if it has the same impact on Blancpain as it had on the Moonswatch. You know, remains to be seen. I just don't know if it has the cultural cachet to go, you know, the Moonswatch was like sold out and people were still waiting in line, and people, you know, waited for a second tranche and were hunting to other stores. Like, that was, you know, crazy. I don't know if they're going to have that kind of mania for this watch. You know, I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't see it. Also, I think Swatch has done a better job of like producing up front and also like managing people's expectations. Like this guy who went to the California store, you know, they basically had security out front and they were giving out tickets to make sure like, you know, they were counting and making sure that, you know, you weren't waiting in line for in the instance that the watches would already be sold out by the time you get in the store. So like they handle things a lot better. So credit to them for doing that. But, you know, I'm not sure it's going to be as crazy as it was last time. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, if you were to kind of spin it off as like, you know, do you remember at one point the Casio G-Shock, there was a craze for them, you know, when it came in a lot of different colors.
Sure. Yeah. Baby G. Yeah.
Yeah. And nothing against Casio or the G-Shock whatsoever, but there was like a hype around that market. And yeah. People went and collected them. It kind of relates to what you said. It became a collectible.
It's a moon swatch. People wanted a full collection of the moon swatch. Like, you know, what are you going to do with different iterations of the same quartz, you know, watch? But yeah, I mean, that's, it's just people. You make five different varieties, people are going to go after it. You know, it's smart. It's smart in a way, right? I mean,
yeah, and it's very smart on Swatch to do this.
Yeah, I mean, watch brands do it with real watches as well, quote unquote real. Like, you know, they do it with Speedmaster limited editions and different variations. Like, you know, they understand. They understand that people want to complete collections and kind of do that. So it's just human nature. So, and look, it's $400. You know, no one's, you know, it's not an arm and a leg. But you know, I do think that, look, you know, there's a lot of videos of the moon swatch literally falling apart, like, you know, weeks after people got it. You know, it's just not very durable.
Once you start feeling the layers and looking a little bit more into detail, you know, you might start questioning, like, how is this still $400? When you compete with you know, like the Seikos of the same price point.
Well, you know, I gotta say, this is in every way a disposable watch, right? I mean, that's how people should look at it. The System 51 movement is not a very high-end movement. It's not serviceable for the most part. You know, I got a link to a guy who like opened one of these watches up, not this specific Blancpain one, but an earlier Swatch release of the System 51. And you know, he basically saw a plastic pallet fork and wheel, like plastic parts where you shouldn't have plastic parts. So, you know, I don't think Swatch looks at the System 51 as a serviceable movement for a watch that was going to last a long time. Like, I think if this thing lasts a couple months, you know, you got your use out of it. You know, I think that's kind of the outlook that I would have if I bought one. So, you know, I got to say,
yeah.
Seiko produces great watches for $400. Like you can get an SKX for, you know, once upon a time for $400. You know, you get a Seiko Turtle for $400. Like that is a proper dive watch that will serve you for decades. So, you know, yes. If you're looking for a real dive watch, do not buy this. Go buy a Seiko for the love of God. Yeah. So, or a Citizen, you know, the Citizen Fuku, well under $400, you know, or not well under, but around there. So, you know, there's no reason to get this. What I'm saying is there's no reason to get this watch. But
look. There's some nice features, right? Like, for example, the bezel, I think, is loomed.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, look, it's like getting sneakers, right? It's like the hype thing. Like, you know, this isn't really for watch enthusiasts. I mean, you know, maybe there's some who are into this line, but like this is really for something else. A different kind of audience, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, you know, for the most part.
Now, okay, if you were to pick one of the five, which one would you go for?
I think I'd go for the Antarctic.
Ah, really? Okay.
Which is the white and blue, right? Yeah, the gray. I like that moisture indicator thing.
Yeah, I was gonna pick the same one too. I think they did that's my favorite. It's funny that it's the least colorful, but it's got a lot of subtle color to it, which I think the color play is very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And the funny thing is we covered last year a bunch of watches using this basic design. like you know, there's a Tornik Ravel, there's the
Bulova
mill ships. Yeah, so like, and those are watches that are like not far off price wise. So like once again, if you're into this design, get a proper watch. You don't need to get a plastic die watch. It's, you know, more or less a waste of your time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in order to make it kind of like a Swiss made watch, right? They had to cut corners. I mean, it's expensive to manufacture anything in Switzerland in the first place. The System 51, I believe, is completely automated in assembly and manufacture, right?
I mean, look, it's not an excuse.
No, I'm not saying it's not an excuse, but
an excuse. Yeah, I mean, look, it's expensive to manufacture in Japan, right? I mean, Japan, Seiko manufactures part of their watches in Malaysia, right? Like they used to do in Hong Kong. Like, granted, fair enough. Like Swatch, I guess you have to manufacture within the borders of Switzerland completely. I don't know what the rules are, but like, I feel like if Seiko can produce a $400 great dive watch, why can't Swatch do that?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you'll just have to look at their other brands, like Hamilton, for example, or any of the other brands.
That's true. No, they do. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I what I don't understand is why is this watch so expensive? Like, this should be like $200, right? Right? I mean, it's a disposable, mass-produced, robot-produced movement with plastic parts and a plastic case for the most part. Whatever, bioceramic, whatever you want to call it. So, like, you know, why are you paying $400 for this? That doesn't make any sense. So that's my two cents. Can't say I'm a huge fan, but you know, you do you. Okay, you do you, boo boo, is basically my Zen meditation for this.
That should have been our title for this short.
You do you, boo boo. Okay, this is gonna sound
it's a nice marketing. It's again very clever by Swatch. And
it's nice. It's
it
nice.
Brings
Live
up
life.
The Live marketing, and brand awareness of Blancpain.
Go eat your. Go ahead and order that avocado toast. Okay, live your life. Life is short. All right, don't worry about it. Okay, find your happiness where you can find it. So if this makes you happy, get it. You know, but
yeah, I mean,
do it with your eyes wide open. That's all I'm saying. All right? Don't go diving with it for the love of God.
You say avocado toast. Is that a reference to something or?
No, I mean, you know, people say, you know, why are you buying avocado toast? You should be saving up money for a house or whatever. Like your $15 avocado toast is going to get you to that down payment on a house. I mean, it's absurd. It's like, you know, live your life. It's fine. You know, we all get where we need to get. So
you're in a YOLO like mood today.
You know, look, if this makes you happy, get it. Okay. But just don't go diving with it because it may not survive the dive.
Hey, no, it's supposedly you can dive it up to 50 fathoms. I mean, that's
supposedly,
the whole point.
Supposedly, yeah. Well, we'll see. Yeah.
So you would go for the, we both will go for the Antarctic.
Yeah.
Or the Arctic Ocean, sorry. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I have mixed feelings. Me personally, I won't get it. I think it's a bit much.
I don't think it's for us. I don't think it's for us, to be honest. So one last thing I wanted to talk about, which I think was just timing wise, but the website Periscope, which does a lot of watch content, basically released an article called Debunking the Fictitious History of the Blancpain 50 Fathoms. I don't know if you've read it, but basically Blancpain's been claiming that the 50 Fathoms was launched in 1953, 1 year before the Rolex Submariner. And this guy goes into all kinds of you know, wild research to basically say there's any validity to this claim, and the answer is no. So the idea that Blancpain came out before the Submariner, the 50 Fathoms, you know, according to, you know, this guy's research, which you know, he's looking at the patent office, he's looking at marketing, you know, there's no validity to that. So,
which is interesting because I always thought the 50 Fathoms was the de facto first true dive watch.
And he claims that, you know, they did that on purpose. Basically, a guy from the company was how these things come out is like he gave a speech at some horological conference saying that that was the case, and that just became kind of like word of mouth what people believed. But like, he actually went into the patent office, and he's actually going into the trademark office and being like, actually, no, they weren't first. So it's interesting. It's an interesting read. You know, you can definitely look at this guy's, you know, research kind of approach, and, you know, you make up your own mind. But, you know, there's reason to believe Rolex beat Blancpain. So for what it's worth.
Well, you know what? Blancpain's got a hit on him.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've bashed Blancpain quite a bit this episode.
Well, I mean, funny enough, if you go to this article, now at the top there is Pinocchio,
yes,
with the nose extended, and it's holding a Blancpain 50 fathoms of some iteration, I cannot tell. I must say that is a very attractive version of the 50 fathoms, and ooh, it's probably the first time I've seen one with the numerals. That's a very attractive looking vintage one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a great watch. It's a famous watch for a reason. All he claims is that it may not be first. So, you know, let's not make that claim. So
the problem I have with Blancpain 50 fathoms and its current iteration is the same reason I think, you know, we have a thing with Rolex with the Submariners. It's become a jewel timepiece.
Yes. Yeah, it's too precious to beat up and do things with. And yeah, I agree.
Like, have you seen what the new 50 fathoms looks like in its like current form? Like the non-numeral version. Like, the indices are so tiny. It's insane. Like, it's like, how is this even a dive watch?
So tiny, you said?
Yeah, the non-numeral version. The numeral one that I'm seeing right now, I guess that does look attractive for sure. And apparently there's a lot more.
$15,000. That's crazy.
Yeah, they add up in price. It's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. So anyway, just get a Submariner. I've basically, you know, poo-pooed both the Blancpain swatch and Blancpain in general.
Yeah, the one I was referring to is like the 50 fathoms Bathyscaphe or Scaffy. I don't know how to pronounce that, but
Bathyscaphe. Yeah, that's a different model. That's not considered. Is that the 50 fathoms?
It's a 50 fathoms Bathyscaphe.
Oh, okay. I always in my mind thought that was a different line, but I guess they call it all 50 fathoms. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's become. I've seen some this particular type of the 50 fathoms in real life. It's definitely got a jewel like aesthetic to it, you know, like the shininess, the way the light plays on it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's not for me, but there's there are those who love it, and if
there's a market for it, yeah, vaya con Dios. You know, you do you make yourself happy. You know, you buy what makes you happy. That's the long story short.
So, in conclusion, you do you, boo-boo.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, and I also wanted to plug, we don't have really traditional closing notes, but I'm really enjoying season 4 of the Blowback podcast. So if you're into history, season 4 is all about Afghanistan. Obviously, we just had the 9/11 anniversary. So it's front of mind. It's a great podcast. So if you're into the intersection of history and politics and, you know, what's going on in the 1980s and all that sort of stuff, it's really, really worth your time. So it's called Blowback. Check it out. All right.
So.
All right.
This short was nothing but bashing Blancpain.
Basically. Yeah. And I'm not sorry.
You're not sorry.
Well, yep. Thanks again for joining us for another Land Jam short. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. Do us a favor. Review us on iTunes. We could use your reviews. And we'll be back with a full episode soon. Thanks.